Good to see all of you tonight. All chipper, ready to study and learn about the Kings. Love this period. This is a special period of the Kings when they don't evidently live very long. We'll talk about that. As you see on the board, please open your Bible. I didn't get mine opened yet to the account of the Kings in 1 Kings chapter 15 and the account of the Chronicles in 1 Chronicles chapter 14 and 15 is where we will begin in our study tonight. As we talk about these kings, I know that Chris and Richard talked with you a good bit about Asa, the king in Judah. When you talk about Asa, what happened to him? When we look at the lineage of these kings, we see that there were both good kings and there were bad kings in Judah. But when we look at the northern kingdom of Israel, we see that there were only evil kings. It was just a matter of degree. They were all bad kings. Some were the absolute worst, and two stand out, Jeroboam in the northern kingdom and Ahab as especially bad kings. Two stand out on the good side, at least as far as our study has progressed. Asa, and the next one will be his son Jehoshaphat. Very good kings. Jehoram, the worst king that we're reaching into the study just now. But I want to go back. I know that you talked quite extensively about Asa. Lots of things to talk about as it pertains to King Asa. He reigned how long? 41 years. Now, when you consider anyone reigning as king for that length of time, you might consider a lot of events occurred in their life. Now, there is something that I want you to note on this, on your charts of the kings, very important, I think, that will help you in your study, and that is you might draw a line or a highlight or something across where the author of our chart tells us that it was the 27th year, for example, of Asa, when Zimri began to reign. Do you see that at the middle of page 3? You also might make some notes that it was the 31st year of Asa when Omri began to reign as king. Okay, now that's still on page 103.
Is that listed in the book?
Yes, these are listed. The 31st year is not of Omri, of Asa, when Omri began. But you can make these notes. Feel free to write in your book, by the way. I encourage that. But be that as it may. When you talk about Asa reigning for so long, you would certainly anticipate a lot of things occurred during his reign. And one of the things that's particular that we want to note is how many things occurred not just during Asa's reign, but consider that the rest of the world was still ongoing as well, and there are things that are occurring there. And when we look across the boundary into the land of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, we see some very horrible things are occurring over there, while Asa is trying to be a good king in the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, as you were studying about Asa, Richard, did you talk about when Asa run amok?
That's the definition of what you mean by run amok.
Well, he messed up.
Yes.
He trusted in other kings and so forth,
yeah,
rather than to trust in God. Well, if you talked about that, then that's good. I didn't remember having all that detail of the conversation, but that's, I can't remember anything. I was talking with Ed about it. I'm laying on to the anesthesia when they put you to sleep. I can't remember anything, it seems like.
But did you run amok?
I run them up, but I'm going to get that back.
When he said trusted other things other than God.
He did.
Yes. Is that similar to when David numbered his army?
Yes. Yes, exactly right. When we read about Asa, we are introduced to him as a king that did that which was good. And he did for many, many years. But as you look at the account in the Chronicles, we see that he began to play politics in chapter 16 in 2 Chronicles. And what kind of politics does he begin to play?
Did he see his desire mercenaries to win the war.
He thinks that, yes. And he sees Syria up here to the north, and Israel is between him and Syria. And the kings of Israel have presented themselves in somewhat opposition. So he wants to make an ally out of the king of Assyria up here. Or not Assyria, but the king of Syria to the north. And certainly that was not God's desire. And he trusted in these political allies instead of trusting in God. And if you'll drop down in the text in verse chapter 16 to verse 8, it says, "Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubium a huge host with chariots and horsemen exceeding many? And because thou didst rely on Jehovah, he delivered them into thy hand. For the eyes of Jehovah run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him." That would make a good sermon title, Randy, right there. But as you look at that, it says, "Herein hast thou done foolishly, for from henceforth thou shalt have wars." What had characterized the kingdom of Asa prior to this? He'd had peace for a lot of years, but now he does not have peace. He's going to have war because he didn't trust in God. In verse 10 it says, "And Asa was wroth with the seer and put him in the prison house, for he was in a rage with him because of this thing, and Asa oppressed some of the people at the same time." Asa's not being a good king now, is he? No. He's become an oppressor. And you know, if you don't like the message, what do? You shoot the messenger. So he doesn't like what he's being told by the prophet of God, Hanani, and so consequently he puts him in prison. We note in verse 12, it tells us that in the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and he sought not the Lord. And he died in the 41st year of his reign, and he was buried. Now, while Asa is king, look at your book, page 102. Page 102. All right, you see where Asa became king. 41 years, go right across the column there, down under Jeroboam. You'll notice the 20th year of Jeroboam. Do you see that? We know then that Asa became king in the 20th year of King Jeroboam. Drop down, if you will, below that. Below Asa, it says, second year of Asa. Do you see that? Go right across and you'll see that Nadab became king in the second year of Asa, the king of Israel, or king of Judah. So we've got Nadab now, the son of Jeroboam, becoming king in the northern 10 tribes at the second year of Asa, the king of Judah. Now you see how they date things. That sometimes gets confusing. We're going to cite an example of that in a little bit. But so-and-so became king during the such-and-such year of this man's reign. And so that's why it will be helpful to you to draw lines across where you see that. Then you'll know who was serving as king in the opposing kingdom at the time this man becomes king. And we want to talk about Nadab just a little bit, the son of Jeroboam. And that takes us back to the account of the kings. 1 Kings chapter 15. 1 Kings chapter 15. In 1 Kings chapter 15, I want to pick up the reading at verse 25. It says, "And Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned over Israel 2 years." Well, that's not very long, is it? It says he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, and walked in the ways of his father, and in the sins wherewith he made Israel to sin. When it tells us he walked in the ways of his father, who was his father? What was Jeroboam known for? Idolatry. That's right. What does that tell us then about Nadab? He's pursuing the same kind of thing. He did evil, just like his father did. Now, you'll note further in the text, it tells us in verse 27, and Baasha, the son of Ahijah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. And Baasha smote him at Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, for Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibbethon. Even in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, did Baasha slay him and reigned in his stead. And it came to pass that as soon as he was king, he smote all the house of Jeroboam. He left not to Jeroboam any that breathed until he had destroyed him, according to the saying of Jehovah, which he spake by his servant Ahijah, the Shilonite, for the sins of Jeroboam which he sinned, and wherewith he made Israel to sin because of his provocation, wherewith he provoked Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger. Now let's pause there. What I want us to see in this was, though Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, became king, he was kind of marked from the beginning, wasn't he? God had already said that the lineage of Jeroboam is not going to continue. It's going to be cut off. You'll note that he was murdered by his own people when we talk about Nadab. Who was Baasha?
I have a question.
All right.
Verse 27.
All right.
So Nadab was off fighting the Philistines, and they were holding, I assume, Gibbethon as a city. They were holding that city siege, and that's where Baasha was able to...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's my understanding. That he killed him. And of course, that was according to the prophecy of 1 Kings chapter 14. If you go back there to verse 10. Randy, would you mind to read that for me, please? These words now are contained. 1 Kings 14, verse 10. Let's set the stage. The context of 1 Kings 14, this paragraph of it at least, is the discussion of Ahijah's prophecy against Jeroboam, when Jeroboam had sent his wife to talk to the prophet. And what was it then that the prophet said to her? You can start at verse 10, yes, for just now. It is. If you'd like to back up to verse 6, that'll start the paragraph. But the point I'm looking for is in verse 10.
I read 10.
All right.
Therefore, behold, I bring calamity on the house of Jeroboam, and will cut off from Jeroboam every male person, both bond and free in Israel. And I will make a clean sweep of the house of Jeroboam, as one sweeps away dung until it's all gone.
That's a pretty clean sweep, isn't it? Yes, it is. And so what we learn in this is that the Old Testament prophet had prophesied that the house of Jeroboam would end. Now, perhaps Nadab did not consider it would end with him. Perhaps he was unaware of the prophecy. But we see that the prophecy came to pass. Joey?
So God said that this is what's going to become of Jeroboam, but we don't have a record, do we, of God telling Baasha to go do that?
No. Okay. No.
So, I think that's interesting to note. God is not necessarily saying that he's commanding one of his own to go wipe out the family. He's just saying it's going to happen.
Well, and keep in mind, though Baasha was an Israelite, let's be careful calling him one of God's own. Because he's an idolater too, you see. And the things that he did were bad. Not a good king. None of the kings of Israel. If you see Israel on the board up here, you think bad. No good kings in Israel. Okay? Of the tribe of Issachar. Yeah. Okay? That would be how that would follow. Now, Baasha, I want to note that he was a very bad king, too. The section of text that we're going to look at is from the portion that's highlighted in red on the board. Yes, Randy?
I'm confused.
All right. I may have you confused. We might blame the doctor. Ahijah, of the house of Issachar.
Have you seen Ahijah before that's familiar, or does it just sound like something?
No, it's familiar. If you'll turn back, let's see. He was a prophet, yes. Chapter 14, verse 2. By that name.
He's the one that Jeroboam's wife disguised herself and went to, and And Ahijah said, your son's going to die. A different son of Nadab is going to die when you get home.
Right. Now, one of the things, that's the name. It's a familiar name to you. I'd have to research to see if we're talking about the same character.
Same man, small role.
May not be the same character, you see.
Same.
Yeah.
There isn't an Ahijah in the reign of Saul. And he was the one that carried the Ark of God.
Okay. There are... It's a name, yeah. Yeah. And it may sound familiar for a number of reasons. There are names very similar to it. Abijah, for example, and Ahijah. Pardon me?
Well, we know that he wasn't in the lineage of David. He wasn't in the lineage of...
That's correct.
Jeroboam.
That's right. That's right. All right? So, Baasha becomes king. He's killed Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, destroyed all of the family. He's fulfilled the prophecy that was given regarding the family of Jeroboam. And let's notice some other things that Baasha did. In chapter 15, verse 17, back up just a little bit. 15, verse 17. Well, let's read verse 16 as well. It says, and there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. And Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might not suffer anyone to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Now, the rest of that paragraph tells us of the political maneuvers of Asa. But what we're interested in this portion, are the things that pertain to Baasha or Baasha, as I've heard the name pronounced. But what we want to see here is what he did and why he did it. He fortified Ramah to keep his subjects from going down to Asa's kingdom. Yes?
As a point on the Ahijah thing, it's not likely to be the same guy as the prophet of Ahijah. The prophet that said that Jeroboam was going to be king, that also said that Jeroboam's sons and his whole lineage would be wiped out. They say he's from Shiloh.
Okay.
And if you look at Shiloh, that's in the province of Ephraim.
Okay. Wrong place. Yeah. Wrong place on the map. Yes. John?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Now, while you're looking at your map, notice where Ramah is. Where is Ramah? Why is it that Baasha or Baasha built a fortified city in Ramah? Pardon me?
Protection.
Well, not exactly protection. Notice the reason. It tells us in verse 17 of 1 Kings 15, and Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah that he might not suffer anyone to go out or come in to Asa, the king of Judah. That's right at the choke point. Yes, sir. It is indeed. Notice on the board where you see Jerusalem. You see it just to the right there inside that circle? You see Jerusalem? Notice that Ramah is just remarkably close, just a matter of a few miles north of Jerusalem. Now, you think it's by accident that Baasha, king of Israel, put the fortified city there? No, it's not by accident. He put it there to keep people from going down and having any familiarity with Asa, king of Judah. In other words, he's trying to maintain some kind of damage control, you see. Control his people. Now, he was not a good king. I want to go back just a bit. How did Asa respond to that? You've studied about Asa. And when he saw what Israel was doing, we just talked about it. What was it that Asa then tried to do? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Going to go up here to the king of Syria, Ben-Hadad, and I'm going to take him all the wealth that we have down here in Judah and try to buy an ally to fight against Israel. He saw what Baasha was doing, yes.
All this, I mean, there's a lot of conjecture as to what was happening. Mesa? I mean, was he talking to God at all during that time? I mean, there's no real way to find out, right?
Right.
But I kind of feel bad for him in a way, because I think it's with, even with us, like now, you get kind of, if God is giving you some blessings and things are going well, you kind of just get into that whole habit of maybe being complacent, but more along the lines of like, well, I'm doing things right, so anything I really decide to do is probably right, unless something really goes wrong. So since this worked for him, he probably was like, oh, well, that's what I should do, since, you know, I've been doing everything right and I've had a bunch of blessings. And but at the same time, you have to kind of laugh, because he did have a direct contact with him.
Yeah.
God already talked to him in a lot of ways, and so instead of saying, hey, what do you think I should do, he just was like, oh, well, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel bad for him that he was probably just thinking, oh, well, I got an idea. This works.
Yeah, we could speculate on that, and certainly when things are going well, we become somewhat apathetic. We're not as alarmed. Now, God reminds him after this, here's what you did. Did not I deliver this great enemy into your hand? Yeah. Didn't I deliver this great enemy into your hand? Yeah. Well, why then did you think I would not deliver this one? And so we reason that way. David? There isn't any. No, there isn't any. He sent the treasures of the king's house and the treasures of the Lord's house to the king of Syria to buy an ally, an allegiance. Yeah, we shake our head at that and say, well, that was a dummy thing to do. And it was. It was just a dummy thing to do. But that's what he did. And here's why he did it. He was afraid. And he didn't trust. He didn't trust in God. Now, when we read about Baasha or Baasha, we know that he died in the 26th year of Asa's reign. How long did he serve as king, Baasha? 24 years. That's right. Had a rather long time to serve as king. But as you turn to 1 Kings chapter 16, drop down to verse 1. And Randy, if you would please, read for me verses 1 and 2.
Okay, 1 Kings 16, 1 and 2. Now the word of the Lord came to Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha, saying, inasmuch as I exalted you from the dust and made you leader over my people Israel, and you have walked in the way of Jeroboam and have made my people Israel sin, provoking me to anger with their sins.
Yes, get verse 3 too, please.
Behold, I will consume Baasha and his house, and will make your house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat.
Well, what's about to happen to Baasha? Well, we'd like to think that things are good with him. Things not going to be very good with him either. Jehu has told of the destruction of Baasha's family. Chapter 16, if you'll notice verse 3 and 4. Him that dieth of Baasha in the city shall the dogs eat, and him that dieth in his own, of his own, he that dieth of his... Read that for me, Randy.
New American reads a little easier.
All right.
Anyone of Baasha who dies in the city, the dogs will eat. Anyone of his who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens will eat.
Thank you. Couldn't get that part out. So the prophet is telling what's about to happen to Baasha, and that's going to end things ultimately for him. But I want to notice that we've got a son of Baasha, and his name is Elah. Elah. In verse 8, no, I want to back up. Verse 5. Randy, while you're reading, would you read for me verses 5 through 7, please?
Okay. So the rest of the acts of Baasha and what he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Baasha slept with his fathers and was buried in Tirzah, and Eli, his son, became king in his place. Moreover, the word of the Lord through the prophet Jehu, the son of Hanani, also came against Baasha and his household, both because of all the evil which he did at the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger with the work of his hands, and being like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck it.
All right, while you're there, read verse 11 for me too. We'll go back and fill in some blanks.
Verse 11. And it came about when he became king, as soon as he sat on his throne, that he killed all the household of Baasha. He did not leave a single male, neither his relatives nor of his friends.
All right, do we not see that there is prophecy that the house of Baasha is going to end? And we see reference to these prophets when Baasha's house ended. And we want to see then how that came to pass. As we talk about Elah, his son, became king, began to reign in the 26th year of Asa. But he's slain by a man named Zimri. How long was Elah king? 2 years. Only 2 years. And he was slain by Zimri. Now, while we're reading here, let's talk about how that was accomplished. What was the capital at this point of Israel, the northern 10 tribes? That's right, Tarzah. And you'll note that it's changed in this chapter, chapter 16, what then becomes the capital of the northern 10 tribes? Samaria. That's right. And we know that, who is it that changed the capital? Omri. Omri moved the capital. But we've got a lot of talking to do before we get to that. Let's back up in the text and talk about the end of Elah's reign. When we talk about the end of Elah, it tells us in verse 9. Randy, would you read for me verses 9 through verse 12?
Kings 15?
Yeah, 16. 9 through 12.
16, 9 through 12. His servant Zimri, commander of half his chariots, conspired against him. Now he was at Tirzah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arzah, who was over the household at Tirzah. Then Zimri went in and struck him and put him to death in the 27th year of Asa, the king of Judah, and became king in his place. You go on?
Yes, please. Through 12. Let's get that.
It came about when he became king, as soon as he sat on his throne, that he killed all the household of Baasha. He did not leave a single male, neither of his relatives nor of his friends. Thus Zimri destroyed all the household of Baasha, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke against Baasha through Jehu the prophet.
All right, so Zimri did what to Elah?
Killed him.
He killed him when he was drinking himself drunk. Thought things were well, things were not well. That ended the dynasty of Baasha. Do you see that? Only Baasha and his son served as king. Now who's king?
Zimri.
Zimri. All right. It tells us in verse 15. Verse 15. In the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, did Zimri reign 7 days in Tirzah. Now the people were encamped against Gibbethon, which belongeth to the Philistines. And the people that were encamped heard say, Zimri hath conspired, and hath also smitten the king. Wherefore all Israel made Omri, the captain of the host, king over Israel, that day in the camp. And Omri went up from Gibbethon, and all Israel with him, and they besieged Tirzah. And it came to pass, when Zimri saw that the city was taken, that he went into the castle of the king's house and burnt the king's house over him with fire and died for his sins, which he sinned in the doing of that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah and walking in the way of Jeroboam and in his sin, which he did to make Israel to sin. Now the rest of the acts of Zimri and his treason that he wrought, were they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? Two or three things. We see that it has been heard in Israel what Zimri did, that he had smitten the king. The king had been Elah. Zimri has killed Elah. All right. So Zimri anticipates that he's the king. How long does he get to be king? For a full week. Wow. And when the people have heard what Zimri has done, they said, no, Omri is the captain of our host, and we are going to make him king. And it would seem that Zimri didn't have too great of a support system. He just went into the king's palace and set it on fire and burned himself up. So then Omri is king. He committed suicide. Now, Omri's reign. When did Omri become king? The 31st year of Asa, king of Judah. You see the parallel across there, or I've asked you to make that notation. The 31st year of Asa. We're still in the account of the kings now. In 1 Kings chapter 16, there beginning in verse 16 and following down through verse 28. But Omri, he thought, no doubt, that he had clear sailing to be king and a loyal following. But did he have 100% approval rating? Why not? Randy?
I don't have the answer. I have a question.
All right.
We were just noticing in the book, it says that Zimri became king in the 27th year of Asa. And Omri became king until the 31st year. There seems to be 4 years up in the air there.
Yeah, there does, doesn't there? Yeah. Well, that's what I want to know. What was happening in the interim here?
In the 4 years.
All right, so we know our calculations are right. Look at verse 23. In the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, began Omri to reign over Israel and reigned 12 years. 6 years reigned he in Tirzah. Well, what's happening in this interim here?
So even though they crowned him king, he wasn't
really... Oh, he's got some opposition. Which tells us that the northern 10 tribes at this point, though the kingdom of Israel is divided... The northern 10 tribes are divided. You've got those who follow Tibnah, the son of Ginath, who want to make him king. And then you've got folks who want Omri to be their king. So the northern 10 tribes, I guess when you leave God, you just can do what you want to. They're divided to the nth degree. So Omri becomes king. And the text tells us that he bought the hill from Shemer and built the capital city of Samaria, named it Samaria after Shemer, as it were, in verse 24. And Omri did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, verse 25. Look at your text. He did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah and dealt wickedly above all that were before him. For he walked in all the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and in his sins wherewith he made Israel to sin, to provoke Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger with their vanities. Now the rest of the acts of Omri, which he did, and his might that he showed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Omri slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab, his son, reigned in his stead. Now, Omri. We don't have a whole lot of information about Omri, but we do have some. And if I can find it, I made a note. Turn over, if you will, to the Old Testament text of Micah, chapter 4, verse 16. Micah, chapter 4, verse 16. Now, first of all, let me ask, who was Micah prophesying to? What did I do? Write down the wrong thing? Well, that would be Micah chapter 6, because that's what I wrote down. Micah chapter 6, verse 16. Not used to seeing it from this sitting position. Micah chapter 6, verse 16. Randy, you make a good reader. Would you read that for me, please?
Micah 6, 16. The statutes of Omri and all the works of the house of Ahab are observed, and in their devices you walk. Therefore I will give you up for destruction, and your inhabitants for derision, and you will bear the reproach of my people.
Who's Micah talking to?
Israel.
Well, look at verse 9. voice of Jehovah crieth unto the city. The man of wisdom will see my name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed? Now we know he's talking to a certain city. What city is he talking to? Now that's the key to the punch here, folks. We gotta figure that part out. Who's he talking to? No, he's talking to Jerusalem. He's talking to Jerusalem. At this point, the northern 10 tribes, they're already messed up. But now Micah is talking to the people of God in the southern kingdom of Judah. And he says to them that what you're doing, you're walking in the ways of Omri. You're walking in the ways of Ahab. What's he telling them that they are doing? You're going down. That's right. Look at the latter part of verse 16. That I may make thee a desolation, and the inhabitants thereof a hissing, and ye shall bear the reproach of my people. What's going to happen to Jerusalem and the southern kingdom? They'll be destroyed. The kingdom of Babylon is going to come upon them and destroy them. Now, when we have it stated here in Micah chapter 6, regarding the things that Omri did and the things that Ahab did, and when we go back to the text and note that the things that Ahab and Omri did were the same kind of things that Jeroboam did, what are we learning about Omri? He was one of the most wicked kings in the northern 10 tribes. And all we have is this little blip about him serving as king for 12 years. But though little is said about him, we know that he was a very wicked king. Yes.
Speculation or, necessary inference, I'm not sure which, but when you look back on some of the other ones, having committed idolatry, worshipped in the groves, and things like that, then you can only imagine if he was worse than others before him, what kind of wickedness there was.
That's correct. We're going to see just how much wickedness there was in Omri as we look at his son, Ahab. Randy?
I was just noting how each king says did evil in the sight of the Lord and acted more wickedly than all over before him. And the next, their son did the same thing. It's kind of like they were trying to outwicked each other.
Yeah. What do we learn about wickedness?
Each generation
kind of becomes progressive, doesn't it? Unless somebody breaks the link in the chain. Yeah. Excellent observation. Now, the writer of our book tells us a little note under Omri. It says, little said of Omri in the Bible, but he was powerful politically. For the next 100 years, Israel is referred to as the house of Omri in Assyrian records. That's significant. Pardon me? No. They're referred to as the house of Omri in Assyrian records. Again, very significant. Now, I want to follow the text. Ahab. Here's where I want to be. Ahab. 1 Kings chapter 16. 1 Kings chapter 16. Let's look first at verse 28. It says, so Omri slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab, his son, reigned in his stead. Verse 29, and in the 38th year of Asa, note those passages, please, when you see reference to that denoting time. Look at your charts on your lesson book, page 103, and make that correlation. In the 38th year, it tells us, of Asa, king of Judah, began Ahab, the son of Omri, to reign over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Verse 30 tells us that Ahab, the son of Omri, did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah above all that were before him. In our lesson book, on page 103, I've called your attention to this two or three times, but I want to be sure that everyone gets the information. You note the three, or the little circles between kings in the lineage of the kings of Israel. What did we say that the writer of our book intends to designate? The end of a dynasty. That's right. He has those little circles here. That's an error. Those little circles should not be here, because Ahab is clearly the son of Omri. It's not the beginning of a new dynasty. Now, when you begin to read there in chapter 16, verse 28, and the following several chapters, in fact, through chapter 22, verse 40, we're going to read of the wickedness of Ahab and his wicked old wife, Jezebel. Not a very nice lady. In fact, it's probably a dishonor to the word lady to use it in reference to Jezebel. But we want to talk about Ahab. Now, you'll note that Jehoshaphat, look at your chart, page 103, that Jehoshaphat became king in Judah in the 25th year, or I'm sorry, in the fourth year of Ahab, the son of Omri. Now, we're not going to talk tonight about Jehoshaphat. We're going to continue to talk about the kings of the northern kingdom for just a while, and then we'll catch up when we talk about Jehoshaphat. But I want to talk about Ahab. Ahab was the most wicked king that we have yet. And as Randy has made the observation, he did that which was evil above all that were before him. So we see this very well can become a progressive thing. Notice that he married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. Now, we want to identify the Sidonians. Who are the Sidonians? Yes. Province or city? You can smack her anytime, Randy. There's Tyre and Sidon. That's right. So Sidon was a city. Here we are reading about another city-state common to the land of Israel. And Ahab married the daughter of the king of this city-state. Now, why were marriages often formed during Bible times? Why did Solomon marry so many women? Make alliances. That's right. It's just business. Just good business. Now, he married this woman who was the daughter of the king of the Sidonians. Keep in mind that Sidon is in the province, I saw it just briefly before it passed away, there of Phoenicia. So what the king is trying to do is to form an alliance between Israel and Phoenicia. Pardon me? They've got the coast. That's right. That's right. Now, you might notice there, where are the mountains of Lebanon?
Right there between Phoenicia and the border.
Okay. So you can see some reasoning in all of this. But the point being, Ahab is forming a political alliance. What had God said about kings forming political alliances? What had God said about kings forming marriages with those who are not Israelites? You're not supposed to do that. Deuteronomy 17 comes again. I want to call to your attention a few notations from, I believe it's Adam Clark's commentary. He says, he took to wife Jezebel. This was the head and chief of his offending. He took to wife not only a pagan, but one whose hostility to the true religion was well known and carried to the utmost extent. I've got a notation down here that's mine. I want you to look at it. Jeremiah 19. Jeremiah 19. Now, somebody remind me. When was it that Jeremiah prophesied, and to whom did he prophesy? David, that's a good question for you. Okay, Jeremiah prophesied to the people of Judah. And in chapter, for the most part, some of his prophecies involved Egypt and others. But in chapter 19 of Jeremiah, in verse 5, chapter 19, verse 5, Jeremiah says concerning the people of God, He says, ye have built the high places of Baal to burn their sons in the fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind. Now let's pause right there. Jeremiah talking to the people of Judah during the days of their idolatry, during the days of their worship of Baal. And we need to take a moment, I suppose, and talk about Baal. Who was Baal? Say, the god of the Sidonians. I know that. Okay. But who was Baal? What was he considered by the Phoenicians and others? Exactly right. Sacrificing your children. Now keep in mind that Baal was, in Phoenician mythology, similar to Zeus in Greek mythology. He was the god of all gods. He was the chief of the gods in Phoenician mythology. And as an act of worship unto Baal, they would offer their children. They would also engage in all kinds of licentious practices. And that part, of course, typical of many idols that they worship. But these are the kinds of things that Jeremiah is addressing. And look, if you will, it's Ahab and Jezebel now who introduced that idol worship among the people of God. Adam Clark continues to describe Jezebel by saying that she was the idolatrous daughter of an idolatrous king. She practiced idolatry openly. She not only countenanced it but in others, but protected it and gave its partisans honors and rewards. Look further. She used every means to persecute the true religion. She was hideously cruel and put to death the prophets and priests of God. And all this she did with the most zealous perseverance and relentless cruelty. Now, when the text tells us that Ahab took to wife Jezebel, you see all that. That's who he married. You think he didn't have any knowledge of who she was before he married her? Let me ask you, beloved, do we need to be careful who we marry? Well, we'll start there next time, I guess.